Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is iFanboy Special Edition, Batman, the Doom That Came to Gotham.
Friday night in the kingdom of doom.
Welcome to iFanboy Special Edition, Batman, the Doom That Came to Gotham. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and the Animation Brain Trust has convened Paul Montgomery.
Hark.
And Ryan Haupt.
A vagrant. Thank you for letting me join. You didn't have to, but you did, and I appreciate it.
And we are here to talk about the latest DC Universe animated original film. Paul, what number?
This is the 666th. It's the 51st, where we think.
It depends on how you count them. Full-length film.
Yeah. Yes.
And so there'll be spoilers in this conversation. This is a Elseworlds story. It's not part of the Tomorrowverse. It's not part of any shared universe. It's its own thing based on the November 2000 Elseworlds tale, Batman the Doom That Came to Gotham, which was a miniseries written by Mike Mignola and Richard Pace and drawn by Troy Nixie. And I had never read this. Had you guys read this before?
I read this a very long time ago, and I intentionally wanted to watch the movie, and then I went back and read it again. But I'd sort of like forgotten a lot of it by the time I watched
it. I think I only ever read Gotham by Gaslight. I don't think I ever... Is this a direct follow-up to that?
No, okay. It is not.
It feels like a companion piece. Like if they wanted to put these two in like a, you know, a bind-up, like this is a good companion to that.
I almost watched this just imagining that it was a Gotham by Gaslight sequel. Like still well,
that took place in the 1880s in England. And this
yeah,
is
no, there were parts of this where I was confused because I thought I got the era wrong.
Yeah, this is the 1920s. You see them pouring out moonshine liquor. And liquor.
Yeah, Prohibition's on. And yep. Bootlegger Ollie Queen will talk about. But yeah, so this is a 1920s tale where Bruce Wayne has been traveling the globe since his parents' murder. And in this animated version, anyway, he collects three little Robins, Dick Grayson, a version of Cassandra Cain, Kal-El Kane, and a version of Jason Todd. It's what was his name? It was
it's spelled differently,
but they pronounce it Todd.
It's Sanjay Todd, T-A-W-D-E, Sanjay Todd, J Todd.
Yeah, Sanjay J. Todd, T-A-W-D-E. Yeah. In the book, it's Dick, Jason, and Tim. And here, Cassandra Cain, Kal-El Kane takes the place of Tim.
I see. Once again, Tim kicked down a hole. Never yep. to be seen again. Wow. I never thought I'd see the day where Tim Drake would just be shunted off the side. Shunted out onto an ice floe.
And I'm a Tim guy, and you think I'd be outraged, but I actually like this change. I'm glad that both versions exist. That's the fun of an adaptation. There's some interesting differences between the book and the movie, and but I like in the movie that it's Cassandra, and it's the idea that that Bruce has gone like all over the world and is a explorer and has adopted these kids, and now is going to be coming back to Gotham and settling down. But there's a lot going on.
Do you think he legally adopted them, or just?
I think he 1920s adopted them.
Just come on my boat. And that's what happens.
It's like Portland. Like you stumble down into a hole and you are
Shanghai'd.
You were Shanghai'd. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So on their journey, they stumble across an event in the Arctic. Where were they? I don't remember where they were in the beginning.
I think they were in the Antarctic. I think they were doing like a Shackleton. They were kind of doing a Shackleton riff. Shackleton was the explorer who led an expedition.
There are penguins.
They got stuck on the penguins. Ice for
There is a penguin, and there are penguins. And there are big penguins.
You guys are interrupting
and
my history.
And yeah, it's okay. So then accidentally unleashing evil.
Eldritch horror. Yeah.
So
already there in the first place.
I enjoyed this, but I don't know if I liked it. Does that make sense?
Sure.
It's not my kind of story.
Okay.
And so I always like an Elseworlds story. I always like to see the differences in the character, how these characters fit in 1920s and what, you know, what's changed, and, you know, Harvey's running for mayor and, you know, Ollie Queen's a bootlegger. Like, that stuff's always fun, and I really enjoy that stuff, and I enjoy seeing, you know, different things. It's just, you know, the kind of horror that this delves into sort of, I mean, how do you...
Cosmic horror.
Eldritch? Is Eldritch the word?
Sure, yeah.
Not in my wheelhouse, but...
Okay.
So, I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it, but didn't tickle my funny bone. What did you guys think?
I really liked this. I liked it a lot. I had a lot of fun with it. Really, really enjoyed it.
I adored this. This is like top three for me.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Top three all time.
Yep.
Interesting. I thought it was very well made.
I think it's very well made. I think the pacing is really good. A lot of times I feel like, well, it helps that this isn't like going for comedy, because I feel like sometimes when they go for comedy, their timing is kind of off and it feels awkward. And with this, I thought it was really atmospheric. It had a good pace for how long was this one?
Because usually I was going to mention, this is a feature length film. This is 90 minutes.
Yeah. It feels like it's not rushed.
When these movies started, they were 70 minutes, and this, then they creeped up into the 80s, and this was a full 90 minutes, which is like the minimum for feature length.
Interesting. Okay.
Around there. So that's why this felt, I remember at one point I was like, wow, they're really doing a lot here. And then I was like, oh shit, this is 90 minutes.
Yeah.
I really liked the design of everything in this. I mean, I almost felt like this is one of the closest films that we've had that sort of mirrors the Batman animated series style since Bruce Timm stopped doing these movies. Like, I thought the way that they did Batman's cowl and face and narrowing eyes, I was like, oh man, I'm getting Timm vibes. This is great.
Yeah. So the original, the 3-issue miniseries was not, me and Connor were thinking, we went in thinking this was Mike Mignola had drawn this, but actually he just wrote it, but it's very much in the style of Mike Mignola. It's Troy Nixie did the pencils on it with Dennis Janke on inks. And the movie doesn't lean hard into that visual style. It does feel more like their house style, I would say, but it's very polished. It looks really nice. It's very dark and atmospheric, which fits the tone of it. Again, they're not going for laughs here, which the book does. The book has Mignola's like wry sense of humor. Like, there are lines where Batman feels like Hellboy, actually. It's kind of interesting. Like, not aw crap, but I think he says like ah shit at one point, or oh boy, or something like that. And it felt very much like Hellboy. But it's like, it's very creepy. They've done stuff like we mentioned, Gotham by Gaslight. And that, I think, was a successful adaptation. It's very different than the original, that original story.
Yes.
Which is cool. But this is like one of the creepier stories that they've done. And it actually feels like effective horror, which I really appreciated. It's different than a lot of the other stuff they've done. And it goes places. Major characters die. Characters transform like forever.
Mm.
So it's making use of that Elseworlds.
Oh, yeah. License. This is totally, it dives deep into that. The big bad turns out to be Ra's al Ghul, or in this, you know, Ra's or Ra's, depending on which production we're talking about. In this one, he's Ra's.
Right.
Very bearded.
Mm-hmm.
Talia is his, you know, right hand. She gets like it was a good Elseworlds story in that it really dived deep into the Batman world. There's a ton of characters in here.
I kept getting impressed by like, oh, they're bringing this guy in, oh, they're doing that. Like, I was legitimately surprised by how many different little facets of the Batverse we get to see in one single film.
Like, there's a take on the Penguin, there's a take on Mr. Freeze. He's not called Mr. Freeze, but it's you know, you see like this frozen ship in Gotham Harbor, and it's this really cool visual. There's a take on Killer Croc.
Yeah. Again, a very creepy design with like the teeth exposed the way they were.
The movie, actually, I started off watching the movie and I was not into it until it got to the introduction of Jason Blood and Etrigan. And that's where it started delving into the, like, a lot of the really supernatural stuff. And like, it visually got darker, because when they're in the Antarctic, it's very bright.
Yeah.
They're there during the day, but then as they get into Gotham, that environment was really...
Yeah, it's much more fun when they get back to that urban gothic horror. situation.
And it's rhyming Etrigan too. It's they had fun with that. And it's just cool. It's like if you like cosmic horror, and it felt to me like, okay, so Marvel just did the Werewolf by Night feature. And that is very much
a send up.
I thought it was a special.
A special, sorry. Yeah. So that was very much a send up and a love letter to the Universal horror movie, the monster movies, the big like Dracula and Frankenstein and stuff. This feels like a modernization of that. It's not as melodramatic as Werewolf by Night was, but even when you get to the end credits, it's very much like a black and white style. Like,
I thought
like
that was fun.
That was very cool looking. This is a great treatment, but it's not like, it doesn't feel like a pastiche. It feels like the modern answer to that stuff. What was it called? The Dark Universe, extended universe that never got off the ground after Tom Cruise's mummy movie. Thing. Yeah, this listen, feels
he was busy saving movies.
This feels like a realization of those old movies if you love those. So I'm getting the cart ahead of the horse, but this is a hearty recommendation for me. And I would say if you haven't read the book and you're not familiar with the story, pause this and go watch the movie because it's full of cool surprises because of the places they're able to go with the characters.
Yeah, for sure. I really liked Oliver Queen's character.
Yes.
I thought he was a fun version of him. You know, Bruce's pal, he's a drunk, he's a bootlegger, but he has this family weight. We find out that several characters have the weight of history on them from their families, which I was surprised by that revelation. I was like, oh, interesting. Well, there's a lot of things that they did in this that made me do that. This was definitely, like I said, it's not my favorite kind of story, so I didn't love it, but I recognize that I thought it was really well written. I thought the animation was strong. As I said, the pacing was strong. So Jace Ricci, I guess, wrote the screenplay based on Mignola and Pace's story. And Christopher Berkeley and Sam Liu were the directors. And I thought this was, as a production, one of their stronger efforts. And it was interesting that they did this on, I mean, who knows about these films. But, you know, this is sort of off the beaten path, sort of a weird, I would say it's a weird one in a good way. And it was interesting that they went a whole hog on the weird one.
I mean, I'd say, there's not huge names on this, but I think it's a really talented cast.
The voice cast is terrific.
Ensemble, yeah.
Yeah. I love David Gintoldi's Batman. I thought he was great.
From the TV show Grimm. So yeah, he's Bruce Wayne, Batman. Christopher Gorham, we've seen a lot. He has been Barry Allen in a lot of them.
Yep.
He gave a kind of a rough and raggedy Oliver Queen that didn't always work for me.
Okay.
Well, it's a totally different one's performance. A drunk, you know, like his voice has been ravaged by alcohol. I thought it was good.
And then he also has like an interesting turn as like a Templar knight, basically.
Yeah. When that happened, I was like, what is going on?
Yeah. When that stuff got revealed, I was more into what was going on with Ollie. So that was good.
I was like, whoa, shit.
So having just read the comic, in the movie, Kai Lee finds him in the church in his like full Templar getup. And she's like, whoa, what's happening, Mr. Queen? And in the comic, it's Tim who finds him. And it's a very like Mignola moment where Tim's like, what's this now? this is odd. And walks into it. And it's very much like the Templar Knight in Indiana Jones in the Last Crusade. I love that trope of like the Templar Knight who has waited all of this time, like centuries, basically, only for one brief moment, like what amounts to like a 45 minute climax to their story.
What a letdown.
Yeah.
The 300 years.
Mm-hmm.
With a film that's 90 minutes, you get time to run around inside, not side stories, but side bits that might have gotten chopped in a 70 minute version. So I like the little bits of Harvey Dent running for mayor. And then he gets poisoned by poison ivy, and that's how he gets the two-face look. I like that we were able to go around and sort of explore a little bit more, breathe a little bit. The story really, I think it was helped by having breathing room.
So there's a moment in the comic
building
that I really liked that is in the movie, but they don't have the caption box because going from one medium to another. The moment where Batman encounters Harvey when he's like gone full mutation where his whole left side has become this big tumorous and he goes through a portal. I don't know if it reads exactly in the movie, but in the comic, the next scene when Batman goes through that portal, the caption is inside Harvey Dent. So it's like that portal is like part of Harvey. Like that is
gross.
A construct of it. Yeah, it's really gross. And I just like that's something you can only do in comics, really, is that caption box. And it just made me laugh out loud. It's so creepy, but also just really funny. And there's a lot of just like great body horror stuff going on in here. And Batman goes through a transformation. Etrigan's pretty gross. You see Penguin and Etrigan bare ass. So that's fun.
Yeah, it's PG-13.
They go all out.
It was interesting because you didn't really know. I mean, if you hadn't read the book, like I hadn't read the book, or if you didn't remember the book, you didn't really know where it was going to go. You didn't really know how it was going to turn. And then Batman turning into a giant bat was not something I had thought was going to happen. And then living in that, like at the end, he's gone. Bruce is dead and he is just a bat.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't expecting. I mean, I guess I should have been because it's a horror movie, but like it just took interesting twists and turns. Barbara Gordon's role as the Oracle who talks to dead people. I was like, okay, why not? Let's just throw it all in the pot. At that point, I was buying into anything they were selling. It's just that it was more horror-y than I'm into. But like that there was always a surprise around every turn. And
it's very imaginative. And I think in, you know, a period now where pretty much everything is multiverse, and like variants of characters that we know, I think this is a particularly inventive one. And a lot of it comes from the source material, which is now like over 20 years old.
Right.
It also just works. I mean, Batman's a character that maps into this type of story nicely, I think.
Yeah, and yeah, I think that's
sort of the beauty of Batman, right? That's why he works so well in Elseworlds, is because you can just put him in any era and any kind of genre of story, and it kind of works.
It's also felt like a better showing for Alfred than we've gotten in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Brian George is really great, like classic Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the most recognizable character. like everybody else has like it's a different version of what we normally see, but it's just straight up Alfred in his same old suit with the mustache, and he's great, and it's a great performance. And I really like hearing Jeffrey Combs as Kirk Langstrom in a brief role. He's got his Lovecraft bona fides in a Reanimator, so it was fun to see him. It's a really inspired cast list. Patrick Fabian from Better Call Saul as Harvey Dent. Awesome choice. David Dastmalchian, who's been doing a couple of these. He pops up all over the place.
He's in the rotation now.
Yeah, in live action and in animation. So he plays Grendon, which is their sort of take on Mr. Freeze. I was very impressed. I want to be as effusive as possible because I feel like I don't usually get to be on these. Like, I feel like I've been down on these lately.
Well, this is like made for you, right? There's a lot of things that you are just in Paul's, you know, wheelhouse. And it was really well done. That's the thing. If it had just been the story, but it had been kind of cheapo animation and, you know, bad performances.
There's so much. I mean, Lovecraft is super problematic as a person. Cosmic horror, there are a lot of great people who've brought stuff to that literary legacy over many, many decades. So I like it as a whole. There's so much Cthulhu out there.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of reached the saturation point. So you're not going to get me just by, you know, wagging your tentacles at me. It has to be good too. And I think this is a really good script. And I think it's, you know, top to bottom, really great. I was just very, very impressed.
Is there anything you didn't like about it?
There's a couple things that I miss from the comic, which I didn't know until I had revisited the comic after watching the movie. And that's in the movie, Bruce goes through his transformation into a bat creature kind of all at once in that final battle. In the comic, it sort of happens over time, so that the bit in the movie where he goes to a cemetery after they've buried Jay and Dick, he's just Bruce Wayne in the movie. In the comic, he's literally still in his Batman costume with a fedora and a suit, because underneath the costume, the transformation is already happening. And he's like turning into like a corpse, basically. And like he turns into more of like an actual bat looking creature in the comic, like the big nose. Like
the art's really interesting. I'm looking at it now, and it's it's like Mignola plus Sam Keith plus somebody else. I can't think of it at the moment, but it's not what I was expecting at all when I downloaded this.
Going into it, I was a little disappointed that they hadn't leaned more heavily into the Mignola style, but on the other side of it, I think that's actually a good choice, because it's more striking the descent into horror, seeing it in their house style. And if they had started out with the very heavy shadows of this original book and what you're used to from Mignola and books that are drawn like in his house style, it's kind of, you're already there. You're already into a very creepy world. And this actually has like a progression into that that third act where everything gets really crazy and people are turning into bat creatures and stuff. So I think it works really well.
Yeah, I felt like there were Mignola in the DNA. Again, he didn't draw the book, but I felt like there was Mignola in the DNA. Like it was very shadow heavy and there was some designs that felt very much like, I guess it makes sense if they were basically enough the designs of the book.
There's like Batman, there's a moment where he's doing surveillance on somebody. I think it's the guy on the phone with Talia, the doctor. Batman's got like this like freaker gear that's like very, it's not quite steampunk, but it's, you know, like Tesla coil kind of.
Yeah, I like the bat tech in the book. He also at one point has like a cool like UV flashlight where he can look for handprints and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I like how they're giving him some techie things, but they're stylized in such a way that they match this world, even if they're a little bit.
Yeah, and there's a little less of that in the movie. It's more in the book, but yeah. And the movie does now they're sort of blending together. The movie does have the cool looking Batmobile, right? You do see it briefly, I think, towards the end, where it just looks like a racing car of the of the period.
Right.
That's always fun when you go to see, when you see like historic.
Yeah.
Prohibition was the origin of stock car racing. It was when, you know, guys started kitting out their cars to drive really fast and look like a normal car.
Yeah.
So they could drive alcohol around.
First of all, I mean, you got to keep the cost down, right? And so the easiest way to not make it expensive is to not try to ape a style, like a different style, but just to live in that zone, but make tweaks. I thought it worked. I mean, I think it works to have it be looking kind of like a normal DC animation so that when it does go weird, it's more jarring than if it starts out looking weird.
Exactly. Like there's amazing Screw on Head. There's the animation with Paul Giamatti doing the voice of Screw on Head. And that is very much in the style of Mignola, but it like that you're through the looking glass. You're in this weird world already from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
With this, it's more familiar trappings. And then you go on that journey with Batman. And I thought that it was really cool seeing like, there's that trope of like, he has amnesia. Like he has this, he went on this 20-year journey out at sea, but before that he had like this trauma, this crisis where he actually saw into the void. Like he had the Lovecraftian moment of like seeing the impossible angles. And that's their take on the origin story where he's accosted by the swarm of bats. Right. And so he has this epiphany of how dark and frightening the world is. And his mind breaks and he forgets that in the process of this round the world voyage that he takes. So there's a kind of an awkward moment in the movie where we have a flashback to the crime alley scene, but it makes sense in sort of the trappings of cosmic horror because the character is remembering it after. It's a very like dark shadows, like melodrama kind of idea that you experience this horrible thing and then you swoon and you develop an amnesia for it. You have like PTSD basically. And
well, cause so much of the Lovecraft stories is like, these things are unknowable by the human mind. Right. Like even if you gaze upon them, they are incomprehensible monstrosities of cosmic scale. So it's just not something the human mind
has
to
like
contain.
Build up like walls to like keep you sane or some version of sane. So the Batman story, the Gotham story, all these different monsters and transformations map really well to the Lovecraftian stuff, Dunwich horror, things like that. And like the idea of there being these long-lived Gotham characters that actually like Gotham build up around the settlement of pilgrims who committed this heinous act that we don't see. We see a shadow of a horse experiencing something terrible. Like they sacrifice a horse, it looks like. And they say, we did some terrible shit. We're not going to tell you. We're not going to show you. But it's like, it is forever tainted Gotham. And the whole arc of the story is like Bruce Wayne has to die and go through this crucible basically. And Gotham has to burn to the ground for it to be saved. And
to be cleansed.
It has to be cleansed. And it's just, it maps very well. It's like we see the stuff in Cosmic Horror, but also in so many different Batman stories over the years. You know, the Dark Knight and Ra's story there, where he's like, you know, we have to burn down Gotham because it's
too corrupt,
decadent. And it's like Sodom and Gomorrah. We have to destroy it for it to come back.
It's also a very Mike Mignola story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
All the kinds of things that he likes to explore has Hellboy universe and. I went to a screening of the documentary that was made about him on via Kickstarter. Yeah, yeah. And he did talk about like there were things he was starting to explore in DC books that were perhaps too out there for DC and ended up finding a home at Hellboy. But he, you know, even here you can see the love of mythology and history and different cultures, demons. You know, there's several mentioned in this movie. He has a great love and interest in all that stuff. So it was really well put together. I was impressed by the quality level of everything. Other than not being my like genre jam, I didn't really have any problems with the movie. I thought it was really well done on top to bottom.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's definitely probably niche, I think. It's definitely not their most mainstream thing. So you're...
But I like that they do it. I had that thought while watching it that it's nice that they will still make these films about these weird Elseworlds tales. I mean, this is not a Batman canon book. This is not a book you hear mentioned amongst the great Batman stories, but, you know, it's an interesting one and it's different and it's a horror one, and horror is always popular. I guess that's probably why they did it. I like that they still blow these many years, 51 full-length films into this, and for however much longer it goes until Warner Bros. Discovery realizes this is happening. But, you know, I'm impressed they still do these things, these weird ones.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, did you enjoy this as much as Paul?
Not quite as much as Paul, but I did really enjoy this. I liked it a lot. It was a nice little movie to unwind with at the end of the workday yesterday. So I'm very glad I was able to get it watched and get to chat about it with you guys. But yeah, I mean, you know, thinking back to your question, was there anything I didn't like about it? Like, I didn't like, at first I wasn't loving Oliver Queen's characterization as a, you know, bootlegging drunk, but then when they kind of flipped it on its head and gave him sort of a, I don't know, pathos in why he might be a really sad, depressed person and also somebody with a really noble, righteous goal, I was like, oh, that's cool. Okay, I'm digging that now. So they got me back.
Interesting. So you would, if they'd never had that twist and he'd just been a drunk bootlegger, you would have been happy about it.
It would have been probably my least favorite of the like reimagined characters that were presented, but you know, a minor quibble.
I think it adds a lot of dimension to like suddenly see him in this getup, like just as a knight kneeling in a church. Like, whoa, what's this?
It's like, what is going on?
Like, I thought I had a grip on who this character was when everything else is so crazy and like everybody's mutating into strange monsters and stuff and hanging out in the sewers, and then you get to him in the church. Like, well, oh, okay, I have to reevaluate this.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting some sort of more Green Arrow-esque getup, and he's just full on a Grail Knight, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my goodness, all right. So this was good. This was solid. I thought it was solid. Paul loved it. Ryan really liked it. So I think if you're a horror fan, I mean, like if you've listened this far and you haven't watched the film, but if you're a horror fan and you haven't watched this, this is probably right up your alley. Or if you like, you know, any of the things that we just talked about.
Yeah, I feel like you're into like Justice League Dark, and if you like, you know, Etrigan and that side of DC, like all the magic characters, I think it's pretty cool.
We'll get to the ratings in a second. But so this was, you know, it came 7 weeks after the last one.
It was very quick, yeah.
There's only, it's hard to say what's next because they haven't really. Justice League War World was announced at Comic-Con, so that should be the end of the year film.
I'm excited for that.
Or the summer film, I guess, is what they're saying. And then, you know, they announced that Milestone film in 2021. I don't know if that's ever happening. There's supposed to be another one.
You think Discovery's really going to start slashing these? Is that what you're hinting at? Or
I just don't know. Normally we know more than what we know right now. That's what I'm saying. We only know of one more. Usually there's a beginning of the year film, a summer film, and then an October film. And instead we had two films come out in the first quarter of this year and one more for summer. And that might be it for the year. Maybe just maybe one more.
Was it since the last time we talked that they announced that there's a new home for the continuation of the Batman, the animated series?
Yes. It was announced since we last talked that it's going to be on, is it Prime, right? Prime is the new home?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me. Like, I don't know. Wouldn't it be crazy if Warner had their own streaming service where they could like put this stuff? And as you rightfully pointed out to me, they're trafficking their franchises.
They're, you know, it's a whole business discussion, but they make more money than it costs them to host it, licensing it. But that's why they're doing it.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at older releases. So in 2021, we had a January film, an April film. So that's two.
I'm amazed you don't already have a spreadsheet of this.
Well, Wikipedia's got one. January, April, June, July, because that was the long Halloween, and then October. We had one, two, three, four. We had five films in 2021. That's crazy. We had Batman, Soul of the Dragon, Justice Society, Batman, Long Halloween Part 1 and Part 2, and then Injustice.
What's the production lead time on projects like this? Do you have any idea on that, Connor? Like,
it's long.
Okay.
So that was sort of my question is, like, are we just sort of now seeing the fallout from the hit they took during the pandemic?
Anything's possible.
I mean, the pipeline slowed down.
I'm looking back and it looks like 3 to 4 films is the norm. occasionally you get a four-film year. Like 2018, there was four films. Gotham by Gaslight, Suicide Squad, Death of Superman, and Constantine. Although that was short, wasn't it? 2019, there was three.
Yes,
2020,
it was,
yeah. There was three. 2021, there was three. No, I'm sorry. That was the year. That was five. 2022, last year, there was three. The average is probably 3.5, but I'm not doing the math.
Is the War World, is that one, or is that like a split in two thing?
I don't know. It was just announced at Comic-Con. Justice League War World would be summer 2023.
Because I feel like that has the scope that it could be one of their two-parters.
It's interesting. So last year, there was an October release. The year before, there was an October release. The year before that, there was an October release. There wasn't one in 2020, but it was in August, October in 2019, October 2018. There's almost always an October release for these films, and there's none on the calendar for right now. So it's interesting to see. You know, this has been going on a long time. My instinct is always the thing I enjoy will get killed, but we just don't know what's coming.
So we've seen a whole bunch of adaptations of things. Like, we're running out of the wish list items. Are there any new things that we would like to see them tackle, or just characters that you'd like to see them tackle?
I don't know that they're running out. I just think we're...
No, I just mean, like, in the beginning, we had like a short list, I guess, of things that, oh, I'd love to see them do this. And they've kind of hit a lot of the big ones at this point.
Didn't I write an article for that Friday Fanboy? I thought that most wanted.
Sure.
Many books have probably come out since then, I'm guessing.
Exactly.
The question is, you always have to tie it to a film or a TV show, right?
Mm, right.
Let's go back to the list. So we got a Green Lantern film, because I think at this point the Green Lantern show was supposed to be out, but that didn't happen. Legion of Superheroes was basically just a cartoon version of the Supergirl TV show. Justice Society we got because they were going to be in the Black Adam movie. So you have to always think about it that way. Wonder Woman Bloodlines, because there was a Wonder Woman sequel.
Well, we've got a Flash movie coming up, and there's no... I mean, what's a good Flash story today? Because I don't think Flash has ever had a standalone movie in one of these.
All right, so here we go. In 2010...
Flashpoint,
right.
2010, yeah, they did it. 2010, after watching Justice League Crisis on Two Earths at a screening at the Paley Center in New York, I wrote this article, the top 10 most wanted DC Universe animated original films. And let's see if they did any of these 10.
Okay, cool.
Number 10 was The Judas Contract, which they kind of did, right?
They kind of did.
Yeah, they did. No, they did Teen Titans The Judas Contract.
Right.
But it was like a modern... It wasn't a one-to-one. Yeah.
I mentioned it because that was supposed to be the second film, and it never got made. Anyway, number 9, I said Hard Traveling Heroes. That's a...
Okay. Not done, which that would be a fun one to see.
Number 8 was Superman and the Legion of Superheroes. They did Supergirl instead. That was the Jeff Johns and Gary Frank arc.
That's a great story.
Seven, Batman Reborn. That's, you know, Dick and Damian. I think that's going to be what the live action film is going to be.
That's where.
Cosmic Odyssey, number 6.
Didn't they sort of do a version of Cosmic Odyssey in the Justice League cartoon?
Did they?
I thought there was a whole thing with Jon Stewart and blowing up the planet.
Yeah, maybe.
All right.
Number 5, the first arc of Justice Society, Jeff Johns's. They did a Justice Society film, so I can't imagine they're going to do another one.
Hmm.
Number 4, Robin Year One. I still think that'd be a great one. Number 3, What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, The American Way. They did do that one.
Yes.
Number 2, Rogue War from The Flash, 220 to 225. That was an awesome arc.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I would be down to see that animated.
I think that'd be fun. And the number 1 I picked was New World Order from JLA 1 through 4, The White Martian Invasion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, then I had some honorable mentions. Superman Red Sun, they did do that. Batman Gotham by Gaslight, they did do that. Dark Knight Returns, they did do that. I was much better hit rate on my honorable mentions.
You were thinking those were like less likely, or?
Well, I said at first I had some Elseworlds candidates: Red Sun, Gotham by Gaslight, JLA the Nail.
JLA the Nail would be a fun one. That's an Elseworlds classic.
So this is funny. I said there were some obvious choices that I would love to see animated, but I think are too complex to tell in one 70-minute film. And so I said The Dark Knight Returns, which I didn't realize they would do in two parts. And Crisis on Infinite Earths and Kingdom Come.
There are many more. You could do like Justice League International would be cool. But my two big ones of like recent stories, I would say, I think it would be really cool if they did Catwoman Lonely City.
Hmm.
That series is really good one. Cool.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous book. It would be amazing to see that style replicated in animation. And then the other one, which I think is kind of in their wheelhouse in terms of the Elseworlds stuff that they like to do, Dark Knights of Steel.
Oh.
Because I love fantasy stuff. So I think that one's
not even like finished yet.
Right.
Yeah. As a series.
But I mean, do their own version of it.
I would be a little surprised if they had a conversation at least about doing Deceased, because apparently that was such a big success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's
I wouldn't hate that.
That's very popular.
That's a big story, and you couldn't even do that in 90 minutes, but, you know.
It's like DC's Marvel Zombies.
Yeah.
There is a rabid
Marvel Zombies, they've tried to return to a couple of times, and I only ever read the first Kirkman book, but, you know, Deceased has had multiple miniseries that have all been really solid, so...
Ryan, anything you'd want to see?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I mean, depending on how like dark they want to go, like some of Tom King's maxi series, like if we could get a Human Target, or instead of that bad Adam Strange short, if they could do, you know, that Adam Strange book, or what was the New Gods one?
Mr. Miracle.
Yeah. So like one of those, adapting one of those stories, I think would be really interesting, but probably outside the realm of what we're actually going to get. I would not hate to see a Superman, Son of Kal-El, like some of the ideas from Tom Taylor's initial run on that, I thought were pretty interesting and good and worth exploring. Mm-hmm. Could look cool. Doesn't fit with their Tomorrowverse brand, obviously. I mean, do you want a World's Finest, Connor?
Specifically that comic, or?
Yeah. I'm just scrolling through my books of what I'm actually reading right now and thinking about, you know, I know these are
I love the book. I don't know that the art is iconic. I love that book. It's my favorite comic, but it's mostly for the characterization and the aesthetic. Like the actual plot of the demon Nezu story didn't do a lot for me.
Gotham City Year One, just a like hard crime drama.
Would have said Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, but we're getting that as a movie, film, yeah. As a live action film.
Would you rather have it as an animated film?
Almost.
I could see that.
How about both? I would...
Chip Zdarsky's The Night, we all really liked.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of fun ones. I mean, there's still a wealth of material out there.
If I get to pick anything from like the entire, you know, history of DC canon that I think is highly unlikely for us to ever see, but man, a Starman
movie? That would be terrific. Starman would be terrific.
Oh, I would eat that with a spoon. You might need to do it as a part one, part two, or even a trilogy, because it's that James Robinson's run on that was very long, but I thought, you know, it's one of my favorite DC runs of all time.
You got to get the style just right on that too, because it's such tough. Like a book of that time.
This movie was kind of close to that, you know, especially with The Shade and his sort of long lividness in the DC world. So I think they've demonstrated that they have the skills necessary if they wanted to go after it. Hmm. Superman Space Age, Connor?
I think you're picking some very heady films in terms of like dialogue.
We're all smart guys here.
And I don't know if those would work necessarily in animation.
Fair enough.
Great comics. I don't know if that, you know, necessarily. I mean, I picked Hard Traveling Heroes, so same thing, same problem.
I told you my method was just scrolling through my books. Jurassic League. How about that? That's the exact opposite, right? I'm surprised we haven't heard anything from the Sean Murphy White Knight verse.
Yeah, I could see them doing that.
Yeah, I could see that as well.
I could see that being very attractive as something that they could market very easily.
Yeah, it might just be that their like car animation department is still expensive or this still doesn't look quite right all the time. So they might just be like, ooh, a lot of cars in that book.
Yeah. There's still a deep well of material. It's just a matter of, do these keep going? And I know people are always sick of hearing that, but, you know, it's a concern.
No, I think it's a reasonable, with there's a lot of shuffling around and... A lot of
with
things
the way
getting
Warner
made
Brothers
and then,
is being handled these days, it's hard to be, you know, sure of anything.
More like manhandled, right?
Everything's very tenuous, yeah.
But, you know, we will, at least we'll be back for Justice League War World.
Yes, very stoked for that. That's a great storyline. And it feels like something fresh for Superman, too.
Yeah, well, we don't know what the storyline's going to be. So it'll be interesting to see if it's at all related to this War World story they just did in Superman or not. Or they're just using the conceit of it. Because War World is not a new idea.
I'm really excited to talk with you guys about the Barbie movie.
I'm excited for the Barbie movie.
It's not animated, though.
And it's not remotely related to comics, but I'm just thinking of movies that I'm excited about. Anyways.
Spider-Verse. Do we need to do a special animated?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the Brain Trust will talk about that as a special film. Anyway, let's rate this film and get out of here. Ratings on Batman.
Paul, you set the scale for me to follow your lead, please.
2.7? No. 4.5.
You're saying 4.5.
I'm saying 4.5, yeah.
I think I'm doing 4.25. We're not here. We're going to block out your negativity with our radiance.
It's not negativity. It's just not my favorite genre.
It's totally fair. I get it.
Unfair, and I reject it.
I'm going to go 3.75.
I think we boosted him up from where he would have gone Without, probably.
I was thinking about 3.5, but I feel like that's probably too low because it was a very well-made film.
It's just, that's the thing. You can't argue. It's just a really well-made, and just the pacing's great, and it really does benefit from that longer running time.
Oh, it really does. And, you know, hopefully there'll be more of these, because a couple of those films we watched could have benefited from an extra 20 minutes.
Yeah.
True.
So, we're the Animated Brain Trust. We'll be back in the summertime, hopefully, for Justice League War World. But in the meantime, we'll have special edition shows on the major superhero films that come out, or the comic book films. We just did one on Paul and I talked about Ant-Man. We talked about Black Adam. Later on comes...
We did Shazam, Fury of the Gods.
Oh, yeah, we did Shazam. I already forgot about that. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse comes out next, I believe, in June, and that's animated. And then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comes out after that, and that's animated. And then Blue Beetle.
So good.
Yeah. Turtles looks really good. Blue Beetle exists.
Blue Beetle exists. That is a movie that exists. It has visuals.
Let's discuss offline whether to do the next Transformers movie, because they are bringing in the Beast Wars timeline, and that's very important to me, so I think we should...
will not be doing that.
Paul, you want to Beast Wars it with me? Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Beast Wars.
So, we'll be back for those, and of course, every week we have the Pick of the Week show, in which Josh Flanagan and I, and sometimes Ryan, sometimes Paul, sometimes other people, talk about the week's comics. You can find all that at iFanboy.com. We have a lot of shows. We've got over 1,300 shows in our feed at this point. A lot of shows to listen to and enjoy. If you have nothing but time on your hands. This was fun. I enjoyed the discussion. We'll be back next time. I'm Connor.
This is Paul.
I'm Ryan. When the sunset will begin turning into